Well, everybody, it's me, Alan Shartok, back here with you on today's program with a copyright forum with Paul Rapp, Bill Westwood, and Polly Law. They're three brilliant people who will tell you what they know or what they think they know.
That's more like it.
They're here to answer your questions about protecting your writing, music, and art. And I want you to get on that phone and call because you're the Vox in Vox Pop. Paul Rapp, of course, specializes in intellectual property law, including copyright, trademark, internet art, and entertainment matters. He's also an adjunct professor of copyright and art entertainment law at the Albany Law School. Bill Westwood is one of the country's leading medical illustrators. I'm going to correct that. He is the leading medical illustrator.
Your check's in the mail, Alan.
And a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. And Polly Law is an artist and illustrator. She runs an art studio and maintains a website at buttonwoodart.com. So give us a call at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/Vox Pop. You can also comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Or you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, and you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Now, if I were you, forget all the other stuff, just do email us at, you know, at voxpop@wamc.org. It's easy to remember, it's easy to do, and we all know how to do that. So here we are, wonderful panel. I love you all. They're great people, and they continue to do this. We gave each of them a glass of water for what they do here, and we are very pleased that they're here. So the phones are all ringing, which is good. That's a good thing. There's one free phone right now. I'm looking at them. You know, they all sort of twinkle. Ah, that's all five phones are ringing before you begin.
Of course.
Okay. All right. Let's go to Rod in East Nassau. Thanks for starting us off, Rod. You're on.
Hey, how's it going?
So far, so good. Don't disappoint us.
I am putting together I'm choreographing a dance.
Oof.
And I would like to copyright that. And I was wondering, can I copyright it by putting it on video and then submitting it for copyright?
That's one way to do it. You can also have it labanotized.
What's that mean?
Labanotation. Labanotation is a form of graphic representation of dance moves.
Wow.
And you can chart a whole dance in graphic representations, and that would be registerable also.
Wow.
How do you know that?
Either one would work.
Yep.
And you could go to, you know, some dance recital and stand up in the middle of the audience and yell, "Thief!"
but the video would be just the performance, not the dance itself.
It could be itself. It could be.
For me to own those steps, I would have to... the long way.
I think if you videotape it, that's good enough. I think that's how it's most commonly done because, what was that word again?
Labanotation.
If you lobotomize it, it'll take you forever.
Well, that's the way the banjo players do it. You know, first finger, second finger.
It's also a good way to have your dance available for posterity.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. I keep wondering.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Good luck.
Yep.
Okay.
I keep wondering about that posterity stuff more and more as I get older and older.
Yeah.
You know, and what you could do to make sure. But and in my case, there's nothing. So,
Alan, come on. At 39, you got.
Yeah.
Come on.
A little while to go. Yeah, it's true. Let's go to Daniel in Millbrook. Okay. Daniel, you're on.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
My question, and thanks for all the good work that you guys do. My question is, I'm a furniture designer and maker, and how do you protect a design or an element that you might be putting into your furniture that's unique without having deep pockets and a team of lawyers to enforce it?
That can be tricky because furniture, you know, design and you know, even fashion, even clothing, the Copyright Office can be hesitant on granting a registration for it because they will say that the design can't be separated from the function.
Right.
If you have something that's really elaborate, that has a lot of design elements that are clearly not associated with the function of the furniture, you can try and try to register it with the Copyright Office as a sculpture. The other alternative would be a design patent. You need to talk to a patent lawyer, and with any kind of patent, you're getting into serious money. Copyright is very, very cheap to do and very, very easy. It's $35 to register it. Patents can run into the thousands of dollars, but I'd recommend consulting a patent lawyer about that.
Also, with a patent, it would have to be a very different chair. It cannot be just a chair with a few design features tacked on.
But he said something about an element, so perhaps the element, if that's unique, would satisfy, as
for
Paul
a
said,
for
a design patent.
Yeah, so those are your two alternatives.
But as far as enforcing your patent or your copyright, eternal vigilance is the price of protection. You just have to constantly, be trolling the web, looking for instances of infringement.
But having a lot of money is a good thing, too. I mean, you know, then you can hire all you want.
Right.
Yeah.
That always helps. Yeah, I worked in the schmata industry, in the shoe industry, and it was, it's notorious for copying. You know, everybody copies everybody. Yeah. I mean, nothing was protectable.
Sure. The schmata industry, I like that.
Well, good luck with that.
All right. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Okay, 1-800-348-2551, 2 free phones. Let's go to Al in New Windsor. Hey, Al, what's your problem?
Oh, hello. So if I have a marketing character for my widget business, I'd like to find out, under this notion of the fair use doctrine, to what extent can people take it and start to share it? So, for example, if this little marketing character appeals to people because of the message he brings about this product line and about this industry, and they start to put it on their websites and share it around, is that something that they're allowed to do if I consider that my trademark? If I'm claiming a trademark, can they share it in that way and pass the image around and put it on their own websites?
Not legally.
Yeah, not, if it's something that's unique and you're using it for a trademark purpose.
What does the fair use doctrine then allow? What is that exactly? Or is that only like for movies and intellectual property like that?
Well, that would allow you to comment on your mark and to use your mark in terms of talking about you or representing you, but not talking about somebody else or representing somebody else. Like comparative advertising. If EverReady is going to compare themselves to Duracell, they get to use the Duracell trademark because they're making a comparison, and that's fair use.
Or if there was a news story done on your company and a news outlet wanted to use your image or compare your image to a comparable product, they could put it on the news. They could put it on TV or whatever, and that's fair use.
Well, when I asked about putting it on their websites, I didn't mean they're using it to sell their products, but I was meaning exactly that. If they want to put it on their website that has to do with this product industry and show my character and talk about my character, that they can do?
As long as the trademark is the little TM, mm-hmm. is clearly displayed, as long as they have your permission.
They don't really need permission.
That's what I was wondering. Do they need my permission to use it in a way that they're going to comment on it?
Probably not. But they have to tell the truth or tell something reasonable. Like it can't be defamatory because that would be if they're making up claims about negative claims about your product, then that turns into disparagement and that's something else.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate
Good
it.
Luck.
Yeah. 1-800-348-2551. Zach, we'll take a little break here, maybe a couple of seconds, and we'll be right back. So if your name is, you know, Howard or Eileen or Max, you know, just stay there.
Support for WMT comes from HMT at the Spa Little Theater, presenting Roald Dahl's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, weekends December 13th through December 22nd, Saratoga Spa State Park, homemadetheater.org. The Alternative Baker, Rosendale, small batch all-butter handmade baked goods with allergy-friendly options, taking orders for Christmas and New Year's, lemoncakes.com. And the Bow Wow Bathhouse Resort and Daycare, South Deerfield, Massachusetts. For over 7 years, providing 10 hours of daily indoor-outdoor play, professional grooming, and retail shop, thebowwowbathhouse.com.
And we're back. That's good. We'll take the next call. Let's go to Howard in New Paltz. Okay, Howard, you're on.
Hello.
Hey. Hello.
How are you? You got a little flash there on the sound. I don't know what that was, but I do a lot of painting outside, sometimes in the village of New Paltz, you know, buildings, streets, and occasionally...
You mean plain air painting?
Plain air painting, yes.
Okay.
And what happens, once in a while, I get somebody who, this particular one, bought a painting from me right on the street, mm-hmm. which is unusual, but it happens once in a while. I do more there than I do in galleries, so it's weird. So he bought the picture from me, and then he asked me if it was okay if he made postcards and put them up in his bookstore. I said, yeah, you know, without thinking about it, because I was so excited about selling the painting. I didn't think about it and whether anything was wrong with it or not.
I'm shaking my finger at the microphone. That was the wrong answer.
Oh, okay. So he makes the postcards, which came out really nice, and he's selling them very inexpensively. And I get information from other artists that I know that, wait a minute, he's not supposed to, and I'm not great with business, so I don't understand. That's why I'm calling you, to see if
too late.
He is doing it. Say it again.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So anyway, I'm just trying to find out what you think, if he was totally honest with me or not. I mean, that's probably hard to tell from where you are and where he is in the store, but, you know.
What did he say to you? Did he tell you he wanted to sell postcards in the beginning?
Yeah, he told me that, and I didn't sign anything. He didn't sign anything. Seemed like a nice guy. He still seems like a nice guy, you know.
Yeah. Next time, if this ever happens again, say, let me think about it, and I'll get back to you.
Yeah.
And then you're going to figure out how much money you would like to make off of the use of your image.
Well, I think he can still go there. There's no signed agreement.
Yeah, I mean, you can revoke your permission.
I think you can revoke your permission.
Hold on one second. Howard, have you broken the rule? Do you have your radio on by any chance?
No, I don't.
Well, because we're getting some interference.
Yeah,
okay,
go
ahead, Howard.
Oh, maybe it's a speakerphone. Hold on a minute.
Oh, maybe that would do it, Yang.
Yeah. Sometimes a speakerphone gives you an echo.
Well, that one will anyway.
Yeah.
There we go.
Okay, that's better.
Yeah.
You can, as Paul said, you can revoke your permission. You can go to him and say, look, this is the way I would do it. I'd say after the current batch of postcards is sold, if you want to make additional ones as of pick a date, then I'm going to need to get a percentage of whatever money you're getting out of these postcards if you want to keep selling them.
Well, he said to me it's such a small amount, you know. And then I went back there later and he took them off the shelves.
But here's the problem. It's a small amount today, but suppose the thing took off and it was a huge amount tomorrow and you have no agreement in place.
And he decided to do a calendar.
And he decided, exactly.
And mugs and tote bags.
Oh, wow, and it's so popular, I'm going to do a large poster. And, you know, those start selling. Or somebody else picks it up and puts it on the Internet. So I think it would do two things. I would register the copyright to that image, assuming you have you may not have a photograph of it, I suppose.
I have the postcards.
Has the postcards.
All right. Well, then I would register that image with the Copyright Office, www.copyright.gov. And I would put the guy on notice. I'd be very nice about it. I'd say, look, you know, I kind of made a mistake. I'm not that great at business. And
we talked to these guys on the radio, and they said.
And these guys said we should be wringing a little money out of
now
it.
Now, you do it, Bill. You do my it, agent. You do it in writing, right? Writing is better
once,
than
once
verbally.
Once I would talk to him verbally, and then I would reduce it to writing. Yeah, that's a very good point.
But have a record of it.
Sure.
Okay, so, all right. I already approached him with that, and he took them off his shelves. But, he's a nice guy, and when I feel a good heart, I kind of melt with them sometimes. Mm. But sometimes I'm wrong. Mm. And he may have a heart with a little black spot on it.
You're not wrong. You just need to take care of yourself as much as he's taking care of himself.
Exactly. No one's suggesting he has a black spot on him. It's just that this is good business.
And, Howard, we're going to let you go. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for the information.
All right. Let's go to Eileen in Westboro. Okay, Eileen.
Hi. I wanted to sell records on eBay. They were LPs that someone had collected, and I took pictures of them and gave him a description and loaded them up, and I was thrown off of eBay, saying that I was not allowed to ever use eBay again.
Hmm. Because? Why? What reason did they give?
I'm not sure. There were other people also selling records. One thing I know that I did was I gave the record label in my description.
All that stuff's important to record collectors. I mean, a lot of records come out with three or four different kinds of labels, and that's relevant, and millions of vinyl records are sold on eBay every day. And I can't imagine why they would throw you off.
But they do throw people off, right, from time to time.
They do. Unless were you selling, like, DJ promotional copies? Did they say anywhere on the records not for sale that they were, like, supplied to a radio station with that stamp on them? Because sometimes record companies get ornery about that. But even then, I think you're free to go. I would ask eBay what the problem is.
Well, that's what I was going to say. How do you do that? Do we know how you call eBay and ask?
They have a dispute resolution person.
Okay. Okay.
Just one.
I'd like
you may have to wait.
It's just fun, and even if I don't make a lot, I'd like to make a dollar or two on them.
Well, sure. A lot of people make their living selling records on eBay.
They're just great old memories, and I'd like to do that. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye, Eileen.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Okay, and now we'll go to Max in Greenfield. Max, that sounds familiar. You're on.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is an amazingly timely call. I finished a book of photographs 25 years ago, which I published with one of the university presses. There were two other authors, both anthropologists and a photo historian. I understood at the time that copyright was implicit upon publication, that being considered the time of creation, if you will. And I was just about to start digging through the internet to find out what I do at the 25th anniversary to renew the copyright of just the photographs. So does your panel have any ideas?
In the book, what does the copyright notice say?
Other than copyright my name, 1988, I don't know what else you're asking for.
You're good.
Yeah, you're good.
You don't need to re-register.
Your copyright lasts for your life plus 70 years. Yeah, the whole renewal thing ended in 1978. There's no need anymore to renew.
But wait, what about the fact that he had two co-authors?
If the copyright's in his name, he's good to go.
Yeah. I mean,
you might want to
register the copyright. Just put the whole book in and say you're claiming, and you can do this on one registration, that you're claiming all of the photographs in the book, and that will give you more protection. But as a matter of law, you own the copyights now and will
your heirs will own them.
Yeah.
And maybe their heirs.
And actually, when you fill out your will, be sure to assign your copyright to someone that you trust. Or love.
Like WAMC.
Well, that is fascinating. Now, what about, there is this business, as I understand it, that Google is gobbling up books, or one of the other monster entities, gobbling up books to begin to offer them under their auspices some legal thing that they can do. How does that violate copyright, or do I have that all wrong?
The publisher has to allow it.
Yeah,
I mean, I see.
Google is digitizing all books, but the only ones they're making available to the public right now are books that are in the public domain anyways.
Which your book is not.
And the rest of them,
all right.
The rest of them, the text will just be in a searchable database, so if you're looking for a phrase or a word, it'll point you to that book, but you still have to go buy the book or go to a library and look at the book.
Do you pay for that service, do you know?
No.
It's just part of the Google service.
Just part of the Google thing.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you all very, very much. Indeed.
Thanks, Max. Good call.
Yeah. Great. Bye-bye.
Let's go to Claudia in Salisbury Mills. Okay, Claudia.
Yeah, I have a question that concerns postcards also and the publication in a book. I'm wondering, I'm interested in old postcards from the say, 40s, 50s, and 60s, and have collected a bunch and have some ideas about them. And if I see no copyright on the card and the businesses are defunct, even if one of the photographers is still alive but no longer in business, since those were designed to be sent out, purchased, and sent into the public, can I publish them in a book and show them and talk about them?
Well, the business of publishing them and sending them out to the public has no bearing on their copyright status.
Okay. But the fact that there's no copyright notice.
Yeah.
Because it was prior to 1987.
Yes.
I mean, 76.
89.
Well, the notice thing was 89. That's
right.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the fact of the matter is they would have fallen under the old law, which meant that they could not be published without copyright notice.
Without a copyright notice.
And have protection.
Right. So, if there's no notice on them, they're in the public domain. If there is notice on them, I mean, I run into this all the time. You're talking about possibly an orphan work where there's a notice on it, but there's no there. You can't find anyone.
The company's gone.
And, in that case, you have some risk if you publish them to, that somebody's going to pop up and say, I own the copyright to that. Although, postcards especially, that's going to be kind of remote.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of the photographers were just salary people, so they didn't even keep the rights to their own postcards.
Right.
It was
the
company that hired them. And then those companies are out of business. In some cases, there's one photographer whose business, I don't think he's still working, but he's still around and his archive exists. But if there's no copyright on the card, I think I'm hearing you say, I could publish them.
If it was published before
1976.
Definitely.
They all were before 76.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have fun.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Let's go to Scott in Slingerlands. Okay, Scott, you're on. Great, Scott.
Hi, I have a LLC that's newly formed and a computer application that has the title of it and parts of it that I'd like to copyright. I'm filing a provisional patent application and was putting the copyright symbol after those words in my description. Do I need to file before... with the Copyright Office, those before I file with the Patent Office?
I don't understand why you're trying to register your patent documents.
Because it's in development, and I'm working with programmers and artists and writers to develop the program to bring it to market.
These are the schematics.
Yeah, this is a provisional patent application, which gives me 1 year patent protection, and then I have to file a full patent.
Yeah.
And my question is about those sort of key aspects of the program that I'd like to copyright. Does it matter whether or not I file a copyright application before or after the patent application?
Probably not, because all copyright is going to get for you is... the actual expression of the elements of your program. The patent will actually cover the elements of your program, the functionality of it, but copyright will only cover your expression of whether it's a description, a literal description, or even just even the code. It'll mm-hmm. protect the exact code. But if somebody wanted to reverse engineer the functionality of it, they could.
And they found they got the same functionality, but by a different route.
Right. Copyright's not going to protect you there, but patent, will. If you can get it, probably will.
And I understand what the scope of the patent does. What I was trying to figure out is there a timing issue with copyright, the parts that, like a word,
no.
and let's just say a folder, something that you wanted to be copyrighted for that application?
Copyright or the registration is considered live the minute you file it.
Yeah, so
and unless it's then later
rejected.
Not, yeah, rejected, but it's considered to be registered once you register it online.
Right, so you might as well go ahead if you're ready and file for the copyright because you can literally do that
anytime
tomorrow.
But we need to stress again that you own the copyright as soon as the work is finished.
Of course.
And registering it is just your declaration that gives you added protections. But you know, you own the copyright as soon as you actually finish writing the description.
Okay. Hey, Scott and everybody, we're trying to allot a fair amount of time to everybody, and all the phones are ringing. So,
great.
Scott, if
you
don't mind, we're going to move on. Thanks a lot. Let's go to David in Cambridge. David.
Hi, everybody. Hi. I think that my telephone call might be a bit redundant compared to some of the prior telephone calls, whereas you guys have already taken a decent poke at my question, which is, I have three things which I do relatively well, I suppose. One, I make models. Two, I have a background in mechanical drawing, a bit of a background in engineering, and like Mr. Rapp, I also play the drums. I'm also a contemporary. I was in a band called The Ushers.
Oh, yeah.
What I've been doing as of late is I'm designing an alternative energy vehicle, and it's the same corporate model as the Tesla, except I'm going deliberately low-tech, whereas this is basically most of the designs in this car, I'm already ripping off different people, Henry Ford for the front suspension, Henry Royce for the rear suspension. So this is stuff is out there, and what makes this unique is the fact that I'm combining the two. The car will run at a number of different fuels, everything from dead dinosaurs to algae, and get 90 miles to the gallon. And last 100 years, think one horse. So I understand that there's a bit of a cost difference between patenting this, but as opposed to copywriting. And where this is important is I'm outsourcing a lot of this stuff because I'm good at the aforementioned fields, but when it comes to welding, I'm not. So this design's going out into the ether, and therefore it might be a good idea to at least take out a copyright protection on this, here it comes, unique design.
You can try.
Yeah.
You can try, but this sounds more patent.
I think they're going to tell you to go to the patent office.
You think?
Yeah. Mm. What you can do is you can ask the people that you are going to have work on the model, the
They're doing the one. I'm doing the 1/18th scale model. They're doing the 1-on-1 scale model that you can actually get
well,
in and drive
around.
Well,
you can have them sign a confidentiality agreement.
But he could also copy once he gets the small scale model done. He could copyright that, couldn't he?
No, it'll
if
just
it's unique.
Be for the way it looks, though. Yeah. It won't be for the functionality.
Well, I understand that, but I hear him. I hear him saying he wants some protection with regard to the way it looks.
Right. And I mean, so you can try, and I've heard car manufacturers going after other companies for on a copyright basis for making stealing design elements. And so you can try, but you have to be very specific to the copyright office about what it is you want to protect.
But
it's basically a 1931 car, new. So it's kind of I'm using old technology. I'm just doing it in a different way.
Right, but again, I think that you could register the image the design elements of the exterior, you know, interior, but nothing with the functionality of the car itself.
Yeah. With which we have to leave you alone because we have to go to a break. Anybody have any last thing that he needs to know about this? No.
No, I'm good, actually. And once the thing is out there, it'd be okay with me if everybody else were to design cars that got 90 miles to the gallon.
There you go.
It brings up to Bill McKibben and me.
Paint the prototype orange.
David, thank you very much.
Appreciate you.
It. Right.
Goodbye.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551. We're going to take a very, 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 very short break. So if your name is Eva or Vince or Dennis or RJ, stay right there.
Support for WAMC comes from Molly Cantor Pottery Studio and Gallery, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, featuring pottery with images of plants, animals, and New England life, offering clay classes and gift certificates, mollycantor.com. And the Honest Weight Food Co-op, open at their new location, 100 Watervliet Avenue, Albany, offering local and organic produce, groceries, and more, honestweight.coop. And Dr. Joseph Cohen, optometrist, eye examinations and classic eyewear in historic Uptown Kingston, most insurances accepted. Optical diversity in the Hudson Valley, CohenOptometry.com.
And we are back, and we're having a great time, aren't we, gang?
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are.
Okay, we'll go to Eva in Great Barrington. No, in Bennington. I'm so sorry, Eva. In Bennington. You're on.
Oh, hi. Yes. I have a simple question, I hope, and I hope you haven't already covered this territory. I'm wondering about copywriting memoir.
Mm-hmm.
My first book of memoir, and you know, I've heard different opinions about that. So I'm just wondering if it's necessary,
okay.
And if so, how I would go about doing that.
As soon as you finish writing it, it's copyrighted. What you want to do is register it with the copyright office after you do that to give yourself additional protection.
Okay. Yeah. So simple.
So answer me a question, Riddler. What is, again, could you do just for me, because I know we hear a lot about this from Rex Smith's A Wonderful Family and all. What is a memoir again? What distinguishes a memoir from another piece of writing?
You're asking Eva.
Yeah.
I think she's off the line.
Oh, boy.
Oh, no, I'm here. Yeah. I'm here.
So what is it?
Well, it's about my personal experience.
Right.
And the thing, I guess my question is, My instructions from some people who I've been working with, some editors, have said in memoir, you know, many houses don't really want the entire book. They want sample chapters and a proposal.
Right. That's true. Mm-hmm.
So I guess I would just copyright what I have, what I'm submitting, right?
Yeah. No, that wasn't my question. I was just interested in the whole concept of, you know, an interesting speech pattern there. Eva, in which you said in memoir, in other words, it's like when they say, doctor, we'll see you now, as opposed to the doctor, we'll see you now. And memoir, you used it without any prefix on it. I wondered why.
Well, I'm not sure.
That's why I asked.
Eva, one parting comment. Just put a C with a circle around it.
Yes.
The date, 2013 or 2014, and your name. And that's a notice of copyright.
Okay.
Okay? And then send it off.
Send it off.
Send it off to the copyright office, right?
No, send it off to the publisher, and then she can register it when she finishes the whole thing.
I see.
Okay, great.
Well, great. Thanks, Eva.
You're welcome.
I didn't mean
to
give you too much of a hard time. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Right. Let's go to Vince. Vince, you're on.
Hi. First of all, thank you for the service you're providing, both the station and the experts. I do stand-up comedy. I've heard in the past that you can protect a concept, but you can't protect lines. And I put my 8 minutes of my comedy act on YouTube. What's to stop somebody from just cherry-picking, you know, lines from my act and say, I like that, I think I'll use it.
Nothing.
Yeah, I mean, joke stealing in comedy is as old as comedy.
It's as old as Milton Berle.
Yeah. And it happens all the time, and I'm sure you've read about, you know, top flight stand-up comedians stealing each other's jokes.
Right. And I've seen my act appear in other people's acts.
Yeah. You know, you if it's verbatim of an entire joke, you can probably copy it. I know that Jeff Foxworthy was able to protect that, the whole "you know you're a redneck" thing. And I think that was not so much on the basis of copyright, but perhaps trademark or unfair business
or
practice.
Or trade dress.
Something like that. But, you know, all you can do is
keep generating new material.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
putting it in writing, sending it to the Bureau of Copyrights doesn't really protect it.
Yeah, it can. It can be helpful. But somebody, if they steal your joke, is probably going to paraphrase it.
Yeah.
And then you know, you probably aren't going to be able to protect it very much.
What about if you wrote those, put them in a little pamphlet, and copyrighted the pamphlet?
Would that give him
any protection in terms of the content?
No, I mean, he could copyright the YouTube video as well, and it would give him protection on, you know, to some amount.
It would give you an arguing point to yell at someone, I suppose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if a lot of people are stealing your jokes, you can make a lot of noise at it and just generate publicity for your own act as the originator.
Yeah,
so
good
you
point.
Can copyright a YouTube video?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
How do you do it?
You go to copyright.gov and you submit under video.
Yeah, an audio video work, and that you're protecting all the aspects of it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Go get them.
Good luck, Vince.
Yeah, right. Let's go to Dennis in Lake Luzerne. Okay, Dennis, you're on.
Hi. I'm a member of a local community band in the area, a concert band. And we buy music and perform it. We're a nonprofit organization. And yet some members of the band have been very concerned that we should not allow recording of our performances, and that any recordings that are made should not be posted on YouTube or anywhere else, because that would be a violation of copyright. And I'm wondering about this.
Yeah, technically it probably would be. I mean, buying the sheet music is, you know, you're buying the sheet music with an implied
license
that you can perform it live. Recording is a different aspect of copyright that you don't have the rights for, and posting it on YouTube is another separate right. I mean, that being said, people record other people's songs all the time and throw them up on YouTube, and the worst that's going to happen is a copyright owner, if they see it and if they're upset about having this posted on YouTube, will post a takedown notice, and then it'll get taken down. But, you know, I see, and we all see stuff all the time that's, you know, technically infringement, and it's on YouTube. And, you know, especially the big publishers certainly know about it. They have ways of finding out about it, and they haven't done anything about it. So, you know, again, it's technically an infringement, but your risk is just about nil.
Isn't one of the concerns that someone might make money off of it? And in this case, we're talking about performances at which no money is charged, or if it is, it's just for the continuation of the group. And the recordings are not, nobody's trying to make money off of them. Yeah, I see it as a promotion of the sheet music publisher's material and arrangement.
Yeah, well, the songwriter's not going to see it that way.
Yeah.
And so you really are infringing, you know, again, technically the songwriter's or the song publisher's right to reproduce the work.
Right.
And the fact that your organization's not making any money doesn't make any difference at all.
Yeah, I just want to warn everybody that, well, we have a very distinguished panel, and I've never caught them doing anything wrong. Some of what they say may fall into the well-known category of heavy FLWs, which are famous last words. In other words, technically, yeah, Nobody will ever. But, you know, you may just get some billionaire who decides you're red meat, so then you have to worry about that.
Yeah, just don't do any Prince songs, and post those on, you know. But, you know, if every technical infringement stopped right now, we'd probably all stop talking to each other and all sound would end and it would just be a silent world. So.
And this show wouldn't be on. Thank you. Thank you very much, Dennis.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's go to RJ in Albany. RJ, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about photography. Regarding registering photographs with the government copyright office, the question is that as photographers, you know, I have hundreds of photographs, and do I, if I want to copyright them, do they each have to be copyrighted, like, individually, or?
No.
Well, they are copyrighted individually, but you can group register them.
If they have not been
that's
published.
What I want to know.
If they've not been published, as Polly said.
Unless they've all been published together already.
Yeah, and I think there's some other special provisions
ASMP,
for photographs.
Yeah.
I would go to copyright.gov and they have pamphlets, they have circulars that talk about registering, specifically about registering photographs, and all the information you could possibly need would be on there.
Hey, RJ, we're trying to get everybody in. We
all
thank
right,
you for
thank
your
you.
Call. Thanks again. Okay, let's go to Rob in Hudson. Rob, you're on.
Hey, how's good afternoon, guys?
Hey.
I have a question concerning selling T-shirts with original artwork and phrases and slogans on it. And one question is, how do you know if that's already been done? Then how do you protect yourself from that?
What do you mean?
Not so much the image, but the phrase or slogan.
You can't copyright a phrase or a slogan.
Right.
Yeah, it's too brief to warrant copyright protection. And believe me, I've tried with T-shirts a couple of times.
So I could put a phrase or slogan on a T-shirt and sell it without...
As long as it's not a trademark slogan.
Right.
Yeah.
If it's just do it and you do that, you could get in trouble.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Now, can I trademark my own slogans or that's not...
Sure.
Sure.
You can try, but the slogans have to represent your business. They can't just be a slogan for slogan's sake.
But
you'd
I like
to put it on like every T-shirt.
Right.
And it should be the name of the T-shirt company.
Yes.
But right. I like what he said. The question is, how can he tell if it's ever been done before?
That's trickier.
Google it.
You can Google it. Yeah. See if it shows up anywhere. And that's actually so Ed, it makes things a lot easier than it used to be, but it's not ironclad.
That came up in the very well known best picture of Forrest Gump. You may remember he was running along, and then the mud came up on the shirt. And he said, "I understand." Years later, that fellow made a lot of money from my
shirt. And you can check the Patent and Trademark Office website too. It's USPTO.gov, and they have you can search all registered trademarks and see what's there.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Okay. Let's go to Maria in Shoshin.
No, it's Marcia.
Oh, Marcia. I'm sorry. It's not often I am able to get both the name of the place and the person messed up. Go ahead.
That's okay. My question has to do with the extent of trademark rights to a logo, specifically Apple Computers. Apple logo. I've read that they had a very long, decades-long lawsuit against Apple Records.
Yep.
They also sued the city of New York to register their trademark for the Apple logo. Even though those apples were different, they ended up getting the rights to the Apple logo. So my question is, how far does this go? Could a grower of actual apples be challenged by Apple Computers if they wanted to put an Apple logo on their box of apples?
If it looked like the Apple Computer logo, they probably would give it a shot and assume you would cave.
And Apple, given Apple's attitude towards trademark, even if it didn't look very much like it.
Right.
Because they tend to be extremely aggressive about
right.
that.
Right. Because I've read it goes, they now have rights to the logo, not just on computers, but on educational materials, on clothing and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, you're fair game if it's even if it's at all similar.
It the test is if a reasonable person would likely be confused as to the source of the product, which doesn't really mean anything. It's kind of like you know it when you see it, but you know if you've got an outline of an apple with a bite out of it, you're probably flirting with trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. All right,
Marcia, thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
1-800-348-2551. We're running out of time here. Let's go to Steve in Great Barrington. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Hey, Steve, what are you doing there? You got a radio on or you're on a...
Got a poker game going.
some ain't right.
Well, someone's having some fun.
Someone's having fun. I wrote a children's song about 15 years ago that was recorded, and on the disc, it actually lists me as the composer, and but I never bothered copywriting it. Is the fact that it's listed on the CD sufficient? I mean, not that I'm ever going to do anything with it, but... Would that be something that I would always have as my name, or do I actually have to copyright?
You know, you still can register it, even though it was initially published 15 years ago. But certainly the having that out there is you know, some kind of proof that you wrote it. And
yeah. Mail it to yourself.
No, Paul.
That's a joke, Steve, because everybody always
go there.
This is the first show where no one has said it. Yeah. Until
the show's not over.
But... you know, if you don't think you're going to do anything with it, is this children's record still in print?
I think it is.
Well, you might as well register your song then.
Yeah,
I wouldn't
hurt.
Yeah, remember, it's already copyrighted. You just want to register.
Take your winnings from your poker game.
Register
and,
your copyright.
You know, spend the $35 to register it.
Okay. I'd have to pay a lot more. Okay.
Okay, Steve, thanks for
thanks
the call.
A lot.
Appreciate it.
Right.
All right, let's go to Bob in Pittsfield. Bob, we're running out of time. Be brief. Go ahead.
Hi, yes. There's a famous muralist that painted a number of murals in Pittsfield, and the city decided to paint over them without his permission, and they changed the whole mural. And I was wondering if he decides to sue the city, taxpayers are going to be liable for a pretty large lawsuit.
That's a violation of VARA.
Yeah, if it was painted after 1990. And there's no contract between the artist and the city. The city could be behind the eight ball on that, and that's something that most cities
don't.
Visual Artists Rights Act.
Right, VARA.
They put sunglasses on some half the people that were.
Do you know when those were painted?
Well, they were painted over the past 20 years, but the. They were painted over about 5 or 6 years ago.
No. What we're trying to get at is
painted.
Yeah, the Visual Artists Rights Amendment was passed in 1990.
Right.
Yeah.
And so if the murals were done after that, they would fall under that act.
But if they were painted over...
Yeah, they were done after 1990.
Okay, but if they were painted over 6 years ago, it's going to be on the statute of limitations.
Okay.
But does it matter who owns the wall?
No.
Amazingly,
that's wrong. It doesn't.
That's just wrong.
And there's a whole...
If I own a wall and somebody puts a mural on it and I want to paint over it, why shouldn't I be allowed to?
Because it's artwork.
That's ridiculous.
What's your address? I'll come and paint something on your wall.
hey, Bob. Thanks.
Wonderful show today. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, right.
Bye.
Let's see. Nancy, could you do it in a sentence or not?
Hello, am I on?
Yes, but you have to do it in a sentence because
we're
running out of time.
Okay. Before I start selling my original artwork or prints of it, how do I protect them from being copied like the guy with the postcards in the beginning?
put a C with a circle around it, the date, 2013 or 14, and your name.
That's enough.
And you don't need to put it on the artwork. It can be on the print or somewhere reasonably.
But,
and certainly if you're doing prints, register.
Yes.
But I will tell you from personal experience, you need to have it where it's visible.
Okay,
yeah.
We are out of time. Nancy,
and
I'm sorry.
Register it, did you say?
Yes.
Copyright.gov.
Okay, thanks guys.
Thanks, Nancy. Right.
Bye.
Okay, and Joe from Duanesburg and Mary from Millburg. Millbury, I'm so sorry. I'm not going to be able to take your time, your call. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Paradise Copies, Northampton, Massachusetts, providing printing design for customers for over 20 years, from digital to offset, color copies, scans, logos, and more. ParadiseCopies.com. From the United Way of the Greater Capital Region, Albany, New York, Live United. Okay, I'm so sorry. Live United, Give Advocate, Volunteer. That's liveunited.giveadvocate.volunteer, unitedwaygcr.org, and the Linda presenting Food for Thought, Xmas Without China. That's Christmas. Thursday, December 19th. At 7 p.m., thelinda.org. Thanks again for joining us. Thanks to Zach Malloy, Patrick Garrett, Tom Jobe, and Jessica Blaustein Marshall, our great production team on Tuesday's program, Birding with Rich Guthrie. Tomorrow's program, I mean, with Rich Guthrie. Stay tuned now for a news update. Goodbye.